Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
Hey everybody, this is Colin. We're just waiting for a few more attendees to show up, and we'll be getting started real quickly here. Thanks. Hey, there you go.
Testing. Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yeah, great. It's great to be on.
Cool. Nice to have you. All right. Well, I think we've got everybody now. So why don't I'll do the introduction here. We met a couple weeks ago. We started talking about, you know, maybe we do a podcast together. And I think the piece that really interested me was the fact that, one, you've got your founder as well. You've got four times founder, three exits. You've been an engineer. You've been on the sales side. You've been on the entrepreneurial side. And the cool thing about sort of why I wanted to get you on today was just the amount of experience you have when it comes to comp plans. For me, it's always been sort of like a hygiene factor. You know, you look at the comp plan and it's always one of those things that can create additional happiness, but having the wrong comp plan can create a ton of dissatisfaction. And so I looked at it through that lens, and I've never really seen it as a value add. And when we were having our conversation about, hey, what should we cover? This is one of those things that kept coming up was, oh, you know, actually it sounds like this is something that can be a value add and we should look at that. And so I'd love to sort of dive in it just before we jump into, cause you're, you know, founder of spiff.com, which is a software tool that if anybody here is in sales can probably guess what the tool does. And if you can't, well, I don't know if we can help you.
You're hitting kind of hard. You're coming out of the gates hitting hard there with the whole comment about, hey, this is just a hygiene factor. But I like it and I appreciate it and totally get it. I do think that's kind of the standard view of comp, right? So mm-hmm. of incentive comp and sales commissions in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's how a lot of VPs, managers sort of look at compensation is, you know what, I've got this playbook, I'm going to copy and paste from, you know, what I used to do to, I'm just going to use it here. So like, why, you know, why would I do anything different? I'm under the gun, I need to do this quickly. So, you know, why would I mess around with something that's worked for me in the past?
Yep.
And so yep. I'm curious, you know, why, if I'm a new VP of sales, and we know that VP of sales roles, especially in the Valley, can be, let's call it tenuous at best. You know, there aren't many jobs that have a tighter correlation to performance, that your performance is very obvious, whether you are killing it or you suck. And there's some subtlety, but it's pretty odd. Like you can look in Salesforce and say, hey, is my VP doing a great job or are they not doing a great job? And so if I'm new in a role, if I'm new into an organization, I only have a certain period of time to really drive enough value to justify, hey, I am good. You should keep me around. Please don't fire me yet. I'm not saying every organization is like this, but this is one of the things that would be going through my mind. So if I'm new, why should I be thinking about sales compensation as, you know, something that's critical as opposed to a hygiene factor?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a great question. And like you said, I mean, I'm going to keep it brief, but do you mind if I just give a teeny bit on my background so I can help the listeners kind of know where I'm coming from?
Sure.
Sure. Yeah. So been a multiple time CEO, run a bunch of different sales teams, and actually spent 4 years as a VC at a company called Signal Peak Ventures. Spiff is based out of Salt Lake. So I'm Salt Lake based, but I've spent a ton of time in the Bay. And I just love your question because, when I was actually principal at this VC firm, we used to always, I just lived the point you made, kind of so viscerally, where we would, the VP of sales is arguably, people honestly kind of think it's a role that could be more important than the CEO. Yeah. It's one of those roles. It's just crazy important. And like you said, it's so measurable. The results are so measurably and generally measurable quite quickly, depending on the sales cycle of the company itself. And so I've seen I've just seen so many VPs of sales from the venture role, and they'll typically come in, and they're very fun people, often usually larger than life. These women and men that choose this career for a living are pretty incredible people, to be honest with you. But they, like you said, they can have a short time span if they don't execute quickly and deliver results rapidly. And those results can be measured very quickly. So why would comp plans be a piece of the equation? I mean, stepping back statistically, it's pretty obvious. Comp plans are 10% of a company's overall revenue, typically. That's based on Harvard Business School research. I don't think there's a single person on the planet that would say comp plans aren't important to sales reps. I mean, the amount of time that they spend thinking about them, and in my three businesses, the amount of time I've spent handling disputes around them alone is kind of massive, actually. It's like, literally, I don't know if 5 to 10% of their overall time would be an exaggeration in certain cases. And so, but like you said, I think it's a combination of factors. I think it's the fact that when a VP of sales comes into a new role, they immediately feel this pressure to deliver results, and somehow the comp plan doesn't seem directly connected to that. I would definitely argue it is, like, directly connected to that, but I get it. It's somehow at first it doesn't seem directly connected to that. And then I think secondly, it's just this big black box of like, well, yeah, but I have no idea if I make changes here, if I pull these levers, what it's actually going to do to the sales team. Like, there's no data here, right? It feels like, it feels very unscientific. It's like, I call it like witchcraft or black magic. You know, it's like, I think those two factors combine to create this feeling around comp plans, which is like, you know, forget about it. Like, it's not going to be a top priority for me. Like, I'm just going to use whatever I used in my last company, which is clearly wrong in a bunch of different ways, which we'll probably talk about more in this conversation. But yeah, I don't know if that answered your question, Colin, but I hope that was like a good lead off, you know, point, because I agree with so much what you said.
Yeah, and I think the one way that I like to think about it is sort of the, and maybe just because I would, you know, one of my first computers was like a Windows 95 machine, and I had to deal with, you know, the device, you know, your sound card, your video card, you know, the motherboard and the firmware and the operating system. You know, I sort of use that mental model when I think about sort of building the company. And if you think about the, you know, the salespeople, you can sort of plug them in there, a graphics card, sound card, you know, whatever, you can have, you know, pieces of RAM, whatever. But there's the sort of firmware is how your company interfaces with the salespeople, right? And that's really
right
in this case. This is the instruction set that you give to the sales team and say, you know, here's what success looks like, and then here's what happens if you hit that sort of success criteria. And so it's one of those things that, you know, I kind of teed it up as, hey, maybe it's not that important, but I think getting it wrong can be disastrous, because you're basically telling you're not just telling people this is the behavior we want, you're paying them to behave a certain way. You know, and the joke is always salespeople are coin operated, and it's like, well, we designed the slot machine, so you can't.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I love it. I mean, I love that you're bringing up this kind of computer analogy. I mean, it's absolutely like one of my co-founders likes to talk about it. In fact, we interviewed the person who runs all of sales ops for a public company called Instructure. They sell software into large educational institutions. And her name is Joanna Finkhauser. And she basically has this quote that she likes to say, where your commission structure is the mathematical instruction set that you give to your sales team. It's basically like, it is the computer program that you're giving to your sales team. So don't be surprised when they understand it like an engineer understands code. Don't be surprised when they find bugs in it, like an engineer would find bugs in code. And yeah, Certainly don't be surprised when they push around the edges of it and expose some weaknesses to the plan, right? I mean, that's what you're literally giving them, an instruction set about the behavior that you want them to optimize. And but I love your other point of like, it clearly is kind of like, almost in my mind, there's sales training is so critical to get the outcomes that you want. There's a lot of research. I just spent some time this morning reading a bunch of research around how training actually helps reps sometimes reps, everybody thinks of reps as being totally commission driven. And there's a lot of research that's come out lately around insurance companies and financial institutions that use commissions, where the reps actually end up selling people things that they don't need because they're supposedly driven by commissions. But there's some really interesting new research too that's come out that shows that reps often don't sell the thing that would optimize their commissions that would help the customer the most. So there are clearly these it's a complex system of which the commissions are a huge part. And you'll never ever hear me say, you know, like, hey, training isn't important. But I think it's also really wrong to say that commissions don't drive a gigantic percentage of a salesperson's behavior. And so it's really the most effective systems, as you might imagine, especially around something as complex as human psychology and behavior, are multifaceted. And you definitely need training, but you definitely need a commission plan that has been well thought out. And frankly, when those two work together, that's when magic happens, because the whole point of commissions is to have people use their inherent capacity and capability and their own intelligence to make decisions that would align with what you would want them to do when you can't control them directly. That's the whole point of commissions. And I love that it aligns with this whole new way of thinking about sales, which is, you know, I actually look at our sales reps as there's sales reps endure all kinds of bad raps, right? But one of the ones that I think is so silly is that, hey, a person went into sales because they're maybe not smart, or they're not smart enough to go into some other area of the company. I think that's so silly. We sales in today's day and age, where people get so much information online to make decisions, sales reps actually have to be crazy smart, like doctors. I think of sales reps more and more like doctors, and they have to know all the information out there and be able to cut through it and present it in the right way to be able to influence folks to get to an outcome that's going to help both parties, right? That takes an enormous amount of skill and intelligence. And that's why I think commissions exist, because, you know, you can't just clone your VP of sales. It has to be, each individual has to kind of figure out how to solve that problem on their own. Sorry for that long-winded response. I hope that was helpful.
Yeah, it's certainly helpful. I'm going to just take a break for just to double check. People in the chat have been saying that my audio is a little bit low. I'm trying to boost it up here. Bear with me, everybody. You can let me know if this is getting better. Hello, hello, hello. Test, test, test. Anybody? I can see a couple of people typing. Better? All right. I just want to make sure I'm not shouting in anybody's ears. Perfect. All right. Up a bit higher. Much better. Thanks, Andrew. Good to see you, buddy. We get a couple guests, previous podcast guests, hanging out and listening in. So cool to see some familiar names. Scott's in here too. Right on, man. Oh, feedback. All right, gotta dial this back. All right. So basically, what we're looking at today is sort of, you know, five myths of sales compensation, and so we're gonna dive into these five. We've actually done some research on, and then we're gonna take time for some Q&A at the end here. So the first one, basically, commissions don't matter much. So are people saying that commission, it doesn't matter, or are you saying commissions don't matter?
Are you saying that to me right now, Colin?
Yeah.
Sorry. That's a great question. So it's funny, there's actually a lot of scientific research on this. Kind of go back to the 80s, there was actually a really famous article, again, written by some Harvard researchers, that kind of said, hey, commissions don't matter that much because you should just use a straight line commission. And there were a ton of assumptions in that data. It was in the 80s, and they were using a bunch of models, and they didn't really actually go into the field. There wasn't a lot of what we call field research in that data. And so basically there was just basically some thought that, hey, you know, commissions are a hygiene factor. You just kind of need to pick some amount and then use a straight line commission. Well, I think there's a lot of new research that shows that that's just total. And in fact, the latest research shows that commissions can can literally affect your top line revenue by somewhere between 8% and 20%. So commissions have a huge impact on your growth. And the basic idea is that there's now new research that shows that certain types of commissions like bonuses and overachievement bonuses and removing caps, that's kind of one of the obvious ones. A lot of companies still have this idea that you should cap sales reps. It's literally one of the stupidest ideas. I don't know why it gets perpetuated, but it's just horrible. There's actually, and I can send an article after we're done here. There's a company that had cap commissions, and they predicted that if they removed the caps, that the company's revenue would increase by 8%. They removed the caps, and the next year, the company's revenues increased by 9%. So there's just some obvious things that we're actually learning now with real data that, you know, we're all speculative before, but now we have software. We have things like Spiff, where you can actually track the impact of commissions, and we can actually make more insightful, predictions and recommendations. So I do think they matter. I think there's actually a lot of, empirical evidence now that they make a big difference, even on top line.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all I would have is anecdotal data to go off of, but I can tell you that if I'm looking for, if I'm trying to hire salespeople, the number one thing I look for is a new sales leader in the organization, an acquisition by a private equity firm, because that tends to bring in new people. They shake up the comp plan. You know, whether we've seen a couple where the company came in and said, oh, the salespeople are making too much. They're making more than the CEO. We got to get our cost to acquire a customer down. They change up the comp plan. All of a sudden growth slows. And they're like, well, what's going on? All their best people leave. We just had probably about a year ago that happened to a local company here in Vancouver. And man, it was great pickings for some awesome sales talent. And
right. I mean, it's true. And it's easy to malign, private equity firms. Sorry, any PE listeners that may be on here, probably not.
Sorry,
mainly sales folks. Yeah, but like, it's always easy to malign investors, right? But but the truth is, it's surprisingly common how many people put a cap on sales rep commissions. It's easy to do. You know, I mean, I would love to personally talk to, if there are any CEOs on this call, I'd love to personally talk to them about why I think I could convince you in literally like a 2-minute conversation why that's just a bad idea. Even if the reps do make more than you do, first of all, I question why that would be a concern at all, since most CEOs are very equity driven. But regardless, yeah, that's an obvious one where it's pretty clear that putting a cap on sales reps just almost universally hurts performance of the overall company. Another one though that you mentioned, and I'll just toss it out there, is there's kind of a nice debate around what's called quota ratcheting, which is, hey, you did really well last year. Let's ratchet up your quota. You know what I mean? I'm sure there's some sales folks on the call that are just live that, right? And that has actually also been shown, not surprisingly, to have a pretty detrimental effect. The problem with quota ratcheting is you brought up another. What were you saying?
I can't believe it. Hey, you did great this year. As a bonus, you get to sell 20% more next year to hit your targets.
Right.
I can't see that having a negative impact on anybody.
Yeah, it's shocking. But the flip side of that is, how do you think about making changes to commission plans? Because you're right. Like it's very rare, because commission plans are a mathematical instruction set for the behavior that you want from your front line and arguably the most important folks in your organization, which are sales reps. It's also very unlikely that your commission plans will stay the same for years and years and years. That's not likely to, you know? And so reps hate it when you change the commission plan, but yeah, and certainly things like straight up ratcheting up your quotas just because you performed well, that's going to create a really bad culture and is going to cause problems. But at the same time, your commission plans have to change. They just have to, because your business environment is going to change.
Exactly. The instruction set needs to continually evolve over time.
Right.
I think just a straight up ratchet every year, that's going to leave a bad feeling in people's mouths. One thing I have seen that anecdotally has worked, and I obviously didn't study it. It was somebody who was previous podcast guest. And if I think of the episode, I'll try and track it down. But I think we were talking in the pre-interview, and he was talking about how they had like an advancement plan for account executives. And what he shared was basically they have sort of two or three ratchets, but they're planned. And so you go from AE level one, AE level two, AE level three, and sort of you advance in the size of deals that you can take on. You advance in your base salary. You advance in your your total quota. But every step of the way, it's engineered so that it's a positive. It's you're going to make more money. You're going to have to swing a little bit bigger, but you also get a chance to work on some larger customers. Your commission is going to go up, so you're going to be making sort of 20-30% more every ratchet. So it's not just like, hey, congrats, same comp plan, sell us more for the same amount. It's, hey, you earned yourself a level up. People like to continue advancing, so let's strive. And then you sort of, they've aligned themselves with, hey, I'm going to ratchet it up, but I'm going to pay you more, and I'm going to do things that are going to make it easier for you to sort of make more money at the end of the day.
Have you seen that work well, Colin?
Anecdotally, I've only worked on a couple of teams and we haven't done that internally here yet. It's probably something we're going to do. The guest was running a fairly large sales team, and it seemed like it was working well, but I wasn't part of their sales team. I haven't talked to their salespeople.
Yeah, I would think that would work quite well. I mean, sales reps aren't, from the ones I've worked with, again, yes, they're going to be a little sensitive to these topics, because I feel like they're almost, I think some of the best sales reps even are almost like abused animals. You know, I have a dog, and if you go too quickly at her, she'll run away, and it's because they've been treated poorly in a lot of previous companies. So I think if you're pretty clear with them and there's a plan in place like that, that isn't what I'm referring to when I'm talking about kind of blatant quota ratcheting. Blatant quota ratcheting is just exactly what you said. It's like, great job, and as a bonus, you get to do 20% more next year. I think pretty quickly, culturally, all the reps can see, hey, I'm on a treadmill, and if you're just going to increase the speed 20%, there's I'm a human, right? At some point, it's not sustainable.
Yeah, and it's just gonna accelerate people that are already having a tough time. You're gonna accelerate good people out of your organization. It's how you create this sort of like negative treadmill of let's just churn through our sales force. And I think if you have 20-30% churn or higher on your sales roles, right? Like this might be one of those things that you're doing wrong.
Yep.
So much of this, like we've talked about it as if it's instruction set, right? And it's uncomfortable when it changes because you've done all this thinking and planning into building your book of business and your plan for the year, right? And when it's continually changing, you sort of have to re-engineer that plan because you want to do what's in the best in your best interest. I started off my life in sales, and it's as close to being an entrepreneur in terms of like how you're paid without actually being an entrepreneur,
right?
For the majority of your
it's such a great analogy.
The majority.
Sorry, of your paycheck is I love that analogy.
Yeah, it's how I've sort of thought about it. I had two grandparents that were entrepreneurs, and that's what one of my granddad always sort of told me and sort of advised me if I wanted to start something, spend 10 years in sales because it helped me figure out a lot of things. And when it comes down to it, like you're trying to communicate, hey, this is how we want you to. This is what we want you to sell. This is how we want you to sell. I've been a fan of keeping that simple so that you don't have to do a spreadsheet in order to figure out what I'm going to make. I've worked for very large companies where a large check or a large bonus showed up on my paycheck. And I remember calling HR, or I talked to my boss, and he's like, I don't know where that came from. And I called HR and I was like, hey, there's money on my paycheck. I don't know if it's supposed to be there or not, but like, could you help me out? And they're like, oh no, that's your bonus from this and that. And I was like, oh, this is a sizable amount of money. And I had no idea it was coming down the pipeline. And like the reason why we give salespeople extra money is to drive behavior. And if you're not, like if it's too complicated to sort of draw the connection of like, I do this, I get paid this amount, then what's the point? So what's your take on sort of just straightforward, straight line commissions versus like, you know, building them to be a little bit more complex?
Yeah, I mean, not surprisingly, I'm on the side of a little more complex, but every commission plan needs to be tailored to the dynamics of your particular company. It's a lot like whenever you're dealing with something that motivates something as important as the core team that's going to drive your top line growth and represents, you know, roughly 10% of your total budget. There's not going to be a one size fits all. Just like you can't tailor a sales process. If you're selling software that has an ACV of $2,000, that's going to be a wildly different sale than software that has an ACV of $1 million or $100,000. So commission plans are similar. I don't think there's a one size fits all. I think it really depends on your market, the competitive dynamics of your market, the sales cycle, how much is in control of your reps and not. Those are really important factors to think about when you're constructing a commission plan. But I'm very much, I'm glad you asked the question. And I've noticed in the comments on the right, there's some folks asking for some of the research. I can send over some links to you afterwards, call something, and maybe we can distribute those. There's some on our blog as well. I do want to make sure we get you guys this research because it is really cool stuff. But one piece of research that took on this exact question of, hey, what about straight line commissions versus more complicated commissions? There's actually a couple of key pieces of research on this, and they've shown actually that sales reps are really smart and that they figure out comp plans pretty quickly. Now they don't know it to the penny. And they often do have their, like, I call it like their, you know, they have their like, what do you call it? Like, their spreadsheets open off to the right where they're kind of trying to figure out their commission. Yeah. Yeah.
Have a little macro. Have those. I do this and Yeah, for sure. I had that plan. I was still getting bonuses out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, you could argue whether or not I actually, you know, earned or deserved those, but you know, they would still show up.
And so the research shows though that yeah, like adding some simple things like an overachievement bonus or you know, accelerators, those keep your high performing reps motivated. If you don't have those, your high performing reps will often taper off towards the end of a quarter or a period. That's really, really important. Those are your best sales reps. So you want to probably introduce an overachievement bonus or some kind of accelerator. You know, quarterly bonuses have been and more frequent bonuses have been shown to, on the flip side, they've been shown to help your lower performing reps. And lower performing reps can become higher performing reps. So, you know, they really help them. That's part of how you help constrain some of your reps that are struggling a little bit to stay on target every day. You give them some bonuses that are a little bit more frequent. So now we've already introduced, you know, accelerators. We've introduced kind of quarterly or even monthly bonuses and maybe some spiffs. In addition to your baseline kind of straight line commission, at that point, you're already kind of dealing with a little bit of complexity, right? You've got an accelerator, you've got some maybe quarterly, maybe some monthly bonuses, and then you've got some straight line comp. There's a lot of new research, or at least some, I don't know, there isn't a ton of research on this, but there's a lot of new efforts to gamify sales. We're actually hoping to produce some research on that, but that will also, you know, having a monthly spiff that changes, a lot of companies experiment with that. And once you kind of have those three or four things, I'm not really ever advocating for a lot more complicated than that. There's a few other types of commissions we could talk about, Colin, like a book of business commission or trailers that is probably another area that some companies should examine or should think about adding to their commission plans. But really, even with just those three or four items we talked about, you're already going to move from like a really simple commission plan to one that's pretty complicated, not like crazy complicated, but certainly not plain vanilla. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I'm a fan of like even going with spiffs, going sort of outside the normal. Hey, I'm just going to give you some cash. Because I think there's lots of research that points towards that companies or that people view, you know, physical like objects or things, they attribute a higher value to them than if you just handed the same amount of cash. So if I won an iPad Mini, you know, and let's say that's $197. I don't know the price, but let's just assume that's what it is. Versus if my boss handed me $197, the gift of the iPad is going to have sort of the similar impact as like $300 or $350. And I don't know the exact numbers, but just sort of as an example, I've seen things very similar to this implemented very well. And I want to say first or second, I think it was the first podcast I ever recorded. It might've come out, might've been published second, but it was Zach Barney. And it's a great episode. I did a terrible job on the podcast myself, but Zach was such a good guest. He had all of this, all of these examples of non-monetary spiffs that he had created with his team. And two of the most memorable ones, one, he, you know, it was almost a mistake in that he maybe had done some math incorrectly. And he ended up doing nearly 1,000 push-ups in a day because he basically said, yeah, it was something like for every call connect he got in a month that he would do a push-up. And by the end of the month, he was up to 1,000 push-ups. And so he worked for, I don't even know if I could do that. I'd probably still be doing 1,000 push-ups. And then the second
one. I don't know. You look pretty buff. You look pretty ripped from this angle right here.
Yeah, I got a special feet app in the, you know, the camera thing. Just adds muscle.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. That's good.
Yeah. And then the AI is great these days. Yeah. And the second piece was, I think it was every booked, it was for his SDR team. So it was every booked meeting that turned into an op, like an op of a certain value, they got to pie him. And so the last, the first day of the next quarter, they basically just took an hour. And there's videos linked in the post. I'll send it out afterwards. And everybody took great joy in just wrecking Zach with pies all afternoon. And these are two things that, you know, they drove a ton of behavior. They cost, you know, very, very little in terms of, you know, Zach doing push-ups or procuring pies. I know some people made their own, some people bought some. Some people came in with like, you know, really, really sizable ones. But, you know, if we talk about, you know, the comp plans are being here to drive behavior, here's some even sort of outside of, you know, simply giving some cash that that have been quite effective. Have you come across stuff like this in your research?
Yeah, a lot. I was reading an article actually this morning about some research in, I think it was a Korean sales team. So a group of researchers had gone out to a Korean sales team, and they basically, they put in place like something like this, a bonus or spiff, and they communicated to one group of sales reps, hey, we're going to give this bonus to you in advance. And, but if you don't sell 6 deals in the next quarter, then we're going to take this bonus away from you. To another control group, they said, hey, we're going to give this bonus to you if you sell 6 deals. And to a third control group, they actually physically gave them the money. Or to the third experimental group, they actually gave them the money. They gave them $1,000. And then they said, you have to pay this back if you don't sell the 6 deals. And then I assume they had probably a control group as well that was just on the standard plan. What do you think? Which group performed better? What would you guess?
Well, I'm thinking the people that physically got the $1,000 on their desk.
That's what I would have guessed too. That was their theory. The theory was that people, it's called loss aversion, and so they kind of felt like that these spiffs and these bonuses they create a motivation. But it should be even stronger if you give it to someone and then threaten to take it away, because humans are I guess, we're more sensitive to having things taken away than we are even to getting them. And what they found is it didn't make a difference. So I thought that was interesting in that one study. I tend to look at some of these things, though, as like, we're probably overthinking it sometimes a little bit. You know, I mean, like there's lots of rich research around, like I mentioned, like not putting caps on reps, you know, having more frequent bonuses for your lower performing reps so that they stay on target. Accelerators are a great idea to keep your top performing reps motivated. There's some key principles, and there is a lot of exciting new research happening in these areas. But I think sometimes I think we maybe try to make it more complicated than it needs to be. With some of your other points though, and I loved kind of what you were talking about there too. I do think with the new generation of sellers that are coming up, millennials, Gen Z, there is a lot of focus on non-monetary rewards. To your point, there's I love that you brought up the pie analogy. Humor and and other these kind of competitive type of these more fun like contests, I don't have a lot of research on that, but I've certainly seen that they can often be, like you said, apparently in my experience as a three-time CEO, more motivating than the money. And there's a famous author named Daniel Pink wrote a little bit about what motivates folks. And he talked a lot about autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And, it's not like sales reps are a totally different breed of folks. I do think that sales reps, in my opinion, are different from the ones I've worked with and the ones that are most successful. They do seem different. They seem often more able to be, to do things that other people would consider pretty hard day in, day out, and to, stay positive and buoyant, even though things are really hard at times when they're getting rejected a lot. So they certainly seem to have some skills that differentiate them from a lot of people, but there's still a lot of similarities. And a lot of folks are motivated by, just feeling autonomous, feeling like they have a sense of mastery and skill in what they do and that there's a purpose to what they're doing. And so couldn't agree with you more. And a big part of what I want to do in my career and here at Spiff is create a system that encourages those types of rewards in addition to the monetary rewards. But I don't think it's a good idea to completely ignore monetary rewards either.
That's totally fair. And so if we look at myth two, straight line commissions are just effective as complex plans, officially busted.
Yeah, I think it's officially busted. Yep, that's almost universally true.
Okay, and so if we're looking at, so now we've gone into more of a complex, so we've said, okay, straight line commissions don't make as much sense or don't have as much of an impact as, adding some accelerators, adding some, some spiffs and some bonuses here and there. Why don't you talk to me a little bit about quota bonuses? How do you feel about these here? Because it feels like similar, quite related. And I guess maybe, yep, maybe we should start. How do you differentiate between the two?
Between quota and what was the other one?
Quota bonuses and just your sort of straight line sort of commission plan.
Yeah. Yeah. So easiest way to conceive of a straight line commission plan is it doesn't even have a quota associated with it. So it's just, hey, if you sell, if you sell $10,000, then we'll give you 10% of that. You get $1,000. If you sell $20,000, we give you 10% of that. You get $2,000. It's just as simple as like, hey, there's some performance metric and then there's some commission rate typically, and you just ratably get that percentage of whatever you sell. Quotas are typically going to have some form of non-linearity associated with them. So it'll be like, hey, if you don't hit your quota at all, then, you don't even qualify for certain rates. Or, hey, if you hit your quota, you get a bonus. So they're going to introduce a step function somewhere into your commission plan. So in that sense, it is related to myth number two, which is, that straight lines don't perform as well as a well-constructed non-straight line commission system that would have pieces that aren't going to be exactly tied just in a straight line to what you're selling. And we've touched on quotas a little bit already. I generally, I think that most companies have found that they can be used very effectively. Certainly if you tie them to overachievement bonuses. So some people think of quotas as just like, hey, I get 6%. If I don't hit my quota, I get 8%. If I do, those types of things can definitely drive increased performance as well. But a lot of companies will introduce multiple tiers of accelerators. So they'll kind of say, hey, cool, you got into the 8% range because you sold X dollars of, the product. And if you sell an additional, if you sell an additional amount, then you can even get a higher percentage. And those are very commonly used in SaaS businesses and to good effect, because again, those are going to motivate your higher performing reps, the ones that did. And there is some indication as well that if you have those in a commission plan, it actually helps you to select for certain kinds of reps that think that they can get into higher tiers. So there's also a signaling benefit to some of those commission plans that will help you to attract the right kind of talent, you know, because folks will say like, oh, wow, I could actually get 12% of these deals that I'm closing if I just sell, you know, more than X dollars a month. And sometimes that will get you your the word is sometimes overconfident reps, but there's actually been some thinking lately that overconfident reps are actually pretty good, that they perform well, even though they maybe don't quite hit what they think they were going to hit. So.
Yeah. Anytime people talk about overconfident reps, confident reps, I always think of like Elon Musk, and I know he's not a true, like, traditional salesperson, but if there's one person who's just super confident in everything he does, it's that guy. I'm like, I can see that, you know, sort of strands of that in certain reps. And it's just sort of it's the image that comes to mind whenever I think of, you know, a little bit overconfidence, because obviously what he's created and achieved has been pretty incredible.
Incredible.
So if we're looking at myth three, quota bonuses aren't always effective. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is kind of one that, you know, I think that is one that if you, it's definitely possible to structure quota bonuses in a way where they won't be super effective. Again, if you're doing a lot of ratcheting. So if you're kind of saying, hey, this was your quota last quarter and you hit it, now we're going to ratchet it up. You hit it again. Now we're going to ratchet it up. So there are definitely ways that you can design quotas where they're not going to drive the results that you want.
I'll be honest. I've absolutely talked to friends in sales that said, you know, I'm sandbagging this pretty large deal to next year because I don't want to get ratcheted up, right? Like I want to come in just under this line, and they've got this insanely complex spreadsheet that just to work out. Okay, where do we want to finish the year? And like and obviously like that's going to be an edge case, right? Like this was not sort of like, hopefully not every organization. And I've only heard a couple sort of one or two instances of this, but it's that kind of like, if I do well, I ratchet up, sort of mentality that you're building into the culture is definitely something that you want to, I think, you know, is absolutely something that you want to avoid.
Yep. Yeah. And you're kind of bringing up a concept of gaming. Gaming's another kind of, you know, we talked about it a little bit at the beginning, but it's a very common feature of commission plans, especially that have time-based quotas. And the particular the word that you'll often hear around this is pushing and pulling. So reps will push, they'll sandbag, like you said, or they'll push or pull deals into a quarter where they've got if there are over accelerator bonuses or accelerators, they'll try to pull. They'll pull them into a quarter where they already have a bunch of those, or they'll push them out. I had a CFO and COO who works closely with me named Matt Stapleton in one of my last companies. And I had that concern when we kind of rolled out a plan around kind of pushing and pulling and timing. And he kind of said, does it really matter? And I think that's the question for sales managers is, does it really matter? And there's definitely some research that that pushing and pulling deals can affect your revenue, but there's not a lot of clear research that it like overall decreases your revenue. There's some, but the problem is that it might be good to have accelerators kind of increase your revenue, but the effect that gaming might decrease your revenue. So it's not clear that those two factors where you kind of net out there, and so. This is one where there's probably going to be more research in the future, but you know, it isn't super clear. I definitely think in any organization I've been a part of that has accelerators, there certainly has been gaming. And to be honest with you, as a sales manager, I've actually been fine with it, just totally fine with it, as long as we're not, you know, doing anything unethical or violating any laws. I actually try to help reps put deals into the period where they're going to get the most pay, you know, because that, like, if they're succeeding, then I'm succeeding. And so if I designed a system that way, personally, I feel like I just feel like it's probably one of those areas where it's okay. They're probably going to try to move a deal into a period where it's going to optimize their commission, and that's okay.
One of the things I like about you is that you accept that you built this plan, and you accept that people are going to, you know, try and do what's in their best interest. I've both in seeing companies that act like this and being a part of a company that acted like this a long time ago, where they're basically trying to reduce their, you know, they're really focused on cutting costs and trying to keep down the amount that they spent on sales, right? And you think about the grand scheme of things, what are we talking about here in Accelerator? If a deal lands in this quarter or next quarter, right? We're talking about a couple thousand dollars, maybe $5,000, $10,000, a $10,000 difference. You know, even if it's a $50,000 difference, $50,000 to a human, an individual human, means quite a bit. $50,000, even $5,000 means quite a bit to a human. But to a company, like, I bet you the company...
Rounding error, right?
Yeah, they spend more on paper towels, right? So
seriously. Like,
what's more important, paper towels or one of your top sales reps, you know, motivation and drive and loyalty to the company? Do you want them to feel taken care of, or do you want them to feel like paper towels?
Yes. I love that, Colin. Couldn't agree with you more. It's cool. A powerful statement.
So myth four, accelerators worth the added complexity. True?
Not yeah. True. Accelerators are definitely worth the added complexity. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, there's a couple of different ways you can structure accelerators, and I actually think you should experiment with tiering. I think that's the other big conclusion I would add to that. So like accelerators are there like that at this point, I think there's starting to be pretty established consensus again, mm-hmm. that accelerators help drive performance from your top reps. And there may be some costs associated with gaming, but I totally agree with your point around those costs. It's paper towels versus the loyalty of some of your top reps. Accelerators do affect your top reps more than they affect others. And so again, your analogy just becomes even more strong because it's truly your top reps that you're talking about when you think about changing accelerators. I think accelerators, that myth is confirmed. It's a great motivational tool, and one that I think companies should make use of a lot more frequently than they probably do. And you should probably add tiers even, or consider adding tiers. That's an easy area too, to experiment. You know, reps are never going to get mad if you add another tier, right? So
yeah, and every time we've grown a commission plan, we've always been very upfront. When I'm onboarding reps, like, I know this isn't the right commission plan, and we're going to work to sort of improve it as we go, as we move along. And at least you know, sort of being upfront with them is like, hey, I'm admitting that this probably isn't perfect, and we're going to work alongside you. Is going to help us sort of get there in a way that feels like we have their best. We're looking out for the best interest of the rep and the best interest of the company, and not just one or the other. I do want to pause. I promised some time for questions. We got one more myth we're going to go into quickly, but now is your time to jump in and start asking some questions. I would love if everybody starts, you know, hitting their, throwing their questions in there, and we'll get to, and we're going to get to the last myth. But just to recap before I move on, because I'm seeing some people asking about myths. So myth number one, commissions don't really much matter. That one was not true. Commissions obviously matter. Myth number two is straight line commissions are just as effective as complex plans, which was not true. Complex plans can add a ton more value. Myth number three, quota bonuses aren't always effective. This one was kind of wishy-washy. There's definitely some for, and there's definitely some more research to be had. Perfect. And the number four, accelerators aren't worth the added complexity, which was, again, not true. And as we talked about, there's a ton of value that can be created in adding these sort of tiered structure to your sales commission plan. Last and final one while we go to questions here. So more frequent bonuses or less frequent bonuses, which is going to be more effective?
Do you want me to jump in, Colin?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I feel kind of bad because I kind of shared some of this again earlier. I jumped in with a lot of answers to the myths early on in the podcast. But yeah, this one is again demonstrated to help a lot. So more frequent rather than less frequent. There's probably an upper bound on that. You know, although I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, there are some folks right now doing some experiments around paying people every day as opposed to every 2 weeks. But in the sales world, there's certainly a mounting pile of evidence that you want to, that more frequent bonuses help folks. So
cool.
Even if the overall amount is the exact same. So literally, like, you don't pay them anymore, but you pay them on a more frequent basis and tie their performance to more frequent cycles, that helps. And it typically helps with your company, with your reps that are learning, because it keeps them motivated and helps them to want to become top performers. The ones that could become laggards, those are the reps that it typically helps the most with.
I think, you know, anytime you're looking at sort of driving behavior, it's the action. The difference between the sort of action and the reward is, if you can tighten up the loop and make that as tight as possible, as tight as makes sense, then I think you're going to improve the sort of correlation to performance. Case in point, the bonus I received, it was, you know, something I'd done 6 months ago, didn't really drive any performance. Even when I was looking at the next year, I'm like, well, I don't know how this can be calculated, you know, but when I'm looking at, okay, if I close this deal, I'm going to get something that's going to show up in my commission check at the end of the month. Is absolutely going to drive some value. We've taken that to heart. We've actually moved everybody that's at PR that's on a bonus system gets that calculated and paid out monthly. We've made a couple exceptions where it made sense to smooth things out over a 2 month period because there were too many ups and downs. But generally, if we can, moving to paying people out as quickly as we can just leads to feel goods, you know, and it's not like it makes it feel like people aren't, like, we're trying to hoard money and take our time to pay people, right? People want to see that on their paycheck as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's great. I totally agree.
All right, I'm going to jump into some questions. We've got about 5 minutes left here. I'm going to play with this new Q&A mode here. So, any suggestions for companies that pay commissions on invoice revenue versus contract signed revenue from Mike?
I really appreciate that, Mike. I wish you and I could talk a little more in detail, because I saw your question come up early on and I was trying to kind of prep a response. I probably need a little more information to give you some great thoughts on that. I'm guessing you're maybe concerned about some difference between invoiced and contract signed, meaning, hey, I got a signed contract, but then we couldn't collect on the money. And so there's a lot of companies will have a thing called a clawback, or, you know, they'll basically say, hey, if we pay on contract signed and then we invoice it and we can't collect on it, how do we handle situations like that? And, you know, most companies will handle that by either, like you said, by not paying the rep until the company actually gets paid, or at least pushing the rep's payment closer to when the company gets paid. Or doing a clawback, which is basically like, hey, we'll pay you as soon as, you know, you hit some milestone, like we sign a contract. But then if we actually don't ever get paid, we'll do a clawback. There are definitely, like, strong pros and cons to both of those. A lot of it comes down to your business process, which one's going to be more complicated or easy for you to administer. Clawbacks kind of have inherent negative aspects associated with them, but most SaaS companies I've worked with end up having to have them in some way, shape, or form. I can tell you, for the startups that I've been involved with, I always try to pay when we get paid. I've just found if you have the systems in place to do that, and you're a relatively small company, that can work. And but it doesn't often scale well, and so it kind of depends on stage. Hope that helped. I know that was a lot of ifs and ands, but I think that's a complex one.
Totally. I threw something in from Mike that I think you should check out, from Mark Robert. She wrote an HBR article on, or post on this. They did a ton of experimentation at HubSpot. I won't go into the details, but I threw a link in the chat, and then we'll throw it in the follow-up notes as well.
Perfect.
All right. Casey, how you doing, Casey? Casey's in the process of hiring their first AE. How do I do the research to find out a starting point and putting together an attractive plan?
There are so many great resources on this. I wish that we had more on the Spiff blog, but you can find some there. Jason Lemkin's stuff, I think, is just awesome on this. If you're in the SaaS space at all, I would definitely look at Jason Lemkin. And I think he's just generally written some awesome material on this. And clearly, you know, there's a strong relationship between Aaron and Jason and predictable revenue and Jason. So Colin, what would you add here? You probably have better advice than I even do here.
You know, I there's so much of it is totally dependent on the industry and the space. I would look at, try and learn as much as you can from your competitors and find out what they're doing. I think one of the most handy parts of the interview process is if you're doing it right, you're interviewing your competitors' sales reps. And so talk to them about their commission plans. It's a source that I think a lot of people maybe ignore or neglect or don't realize that, hey, you can, here's an opportunity where somebody's looking for a job, they're going to tell you a lot about what's going on with the competitor. And I'll double stamp your sort of recommendation for checking out Jason's stuff. I just threw a link in the comments here on the Ultimate Guide to SaaS Sales Compensation. So check that out. That's from Jason Lemkin himself. Probably got time for one or two more questions here. Give me 2 seconds. I'm just going to have a gander. All right. So Jim is asking about, wants to know what you think of only paying commissions after AEs cover their base salary, but keeping commissions uncapped after that.
Yeah, I think uncapped is great. I get it on the downside, on kind of covering your downside there, where you only start paying commissions after they cover their base. I think depending on the dynamics of your business and what your customer acquisition costs are and kind of your LTV of your customer, that could be a great strategy. You know, again, so much of these kind of commissions decisions really hinge on there's a constant tension between, hey, if I pay my sales reps less, then I'll have more money to invest in growth in other areas and maybe even hiring more reps. So as long as you can recruit and retain attractive talent with folks that don't get commissioned until they cover their base, I think that that's a clever way of basically conserving some cash for you for folks that may not perform super well, but also still motivating folks that that are likely to perform really well by not capping their commissions and attracting the right kinds of talent. Uncapped commissions should help you to attract the right kinds of talented reps.
For sure. I'll play devil's advocate here. I think the any time where an entrepreneur is doing too much, is trying to cover their downside, can come off as the organization feeling cheap, not wanting to invest in their people. And so if you're going to go down this route, I personally wouldn't recommend it, but I don't have any data that backs it up. I haven't done any of the research. I just know from, you know, being a sales rep or being in sales for about 15 years, any company that's trying to get too fancy with their plan around covering, protecting the company, I'm going to steer clear of. And I know, you know, I know this isn't, I don't have any data to back it up, but I just think it's one of those opportunities for the company. You know, do you want your reps to feel like they're taken care of? Or do you want them to feel like, you know, the company's taken care of? And I think that's the decision you need to make, and that your compensation plan is going to reflect that. So I personally wouldn't, I'm not a fan of the covering the base, you know, the base salary first. You know, you want to be, like we talk about the, earlier, that the closer you pay reps in relation to them actually performing, the more their motivation, the more their activity you're actually going to drive. With what you're doing with a plan like this is you're deferring all of that. You're saying, hey, great, you closed, you know, so maybe it's the first, maybe you're covering the base, maybe you're covering, you know, for the first, you know, your monthly, if you do it monthly and say you pay your rep 60K your base, and then there's another 60K in commission, that contributes to their OTE. Great. So now I've got to contribute up to sort of 5K every month, and I'm not getting paid on that first 5K of sale. Especially in the early days when you're just trying to push a big rock up a hill and generate some momentum, that can be a really hard thing to do, and it can be crushing to those reps that are trying to ramp. If you're getting reps that are, you know, you might get some exceptional reps with that that do really, really well. But I think if you're trying to build up, you know, good reps into great reps, I suspect they could get crushed under the rock of, you know, and not make it up and over the hill.
I'm gonna reverse course and agree with Colin on that. I think you're totally right. I think I'm very clear on the, I love the uncapped piece of that suggestion. But yeah, I think you're probably right, Colin.
Cool. Well, people seem to be hanging around. I know we're at a couple minutes past the top of the hour, but we got people hanging around. So we're going to bump through a couple quick questions if you get another 5 minutes. Great. All right. So what's your opinion on high base, low commission versus high, high base, low commission, low base, high commission?
Yeah, let me say two things because I reversed course on my last comment with Colin too. I want to say, you know, first of all, I will express my opinion here, but I would always prefer to express, you know, I'd always prefer to point to data. There is some data on this question and I can point to it. And Colin, I need to coordinate with you afterwards where I can get you some links to all this stuff.
Yeah, we'll be able to send out all the links.
Okay, perfect. But I also want to say that some of these questions are like, these questions which create like a heyday for a data scientist, right? I mean, like having like a really, really smart statistical study on some of these questions, especially at your individual company, would be amazing with the dynamics that your particular company has. That's the era that we're entering. We're not there yet. And that's part of why Spiff exists, our company, is because we're going to take the pain we're going to automate commissions and take the pain out of your finance team of having to calculate these commissions. We match your existing plan right now. But in the background, what we're doing is we're actually tracking all the data and we're creating experiments for you so that we can see what would actually work better. Because we really, our main goal is, it's like, we're coming in through the finance team, but our main goal is actually help drive top line performance. And there's a lot of other companies like us that are starting to be able to do this. On this one, I'll just answer it really quickly. The conventional wisdom here that's based on research is that you want higher base and lower commissions when you're generally in longer sales cycles, when your business has longer sales cycle, and you're convinced that there's a lot of luck involved in closing a deal. So the higher amount of luck there is, and the longer the sales cycle is, then often you'll want to have a higher base salary relative to the commission. That isn't to say you don't have commission; it's just those ratios go up. When there's less luck, and when the sales cycles are very rapid, then you can often do higher commission and lower base. And I think that kind of goes with Colin's point earlier too, which is like, hey, reps can get more immediate feedback. So, and they can also start making money without having to rely on their base because they don't have to wait for this huge sales cycle. You can often get away with a really high commission percentage of the total OTE for situations like that.
Perfect. Last two questions here. I'm going to take this one because it's easy. And should the lead generator get commission or not? Yes. pay them to, yeah, think about the activities you want. You want them creating opportunities. You want them booking meetings that where the prospect shows up to the meeting. Then they get paid. And then I like to, and that's, I would say, the majority of their pay. And then you want them to have a little bit of upside. And so there can be a little accelerator or a little spiff if one of those deals closes. That's how I'd recommend doing it. And anything to add there? Can we go to the last one?
No, I love that you answered it so quickly, yes. And that's why I was laughing. And I totally agree. The one thing you didn't highlight, Colin, but I think you probably would agree with this. Actually, maybe not, because you know sometimes you're kind of controversial. But no, I'm kidding. But like one of the things is it also aligns around the quality of the leads, right? So it's also will help them to hopefully it'll help the lead generator to focus on leads that are likely to generate more commission for the closer. And generally, if you've designed your commission rules right, those types of deals that generate more commission are the better deals for your company. So it aligns around quality, not just that they'll keep the meeting, but also that the type of companies that they're, the type of prospect will actually be a higher quality prospect.
Perfect. And yep. last one here. Yeah, totally agree on that, by the way. For SaaS Great. Companies with percentage of revenue commissions, you recommend tiered, reducing every 3 years for the first 3 years, this sounds like ratcheting to me, doesn't it?
Reducing every year for the first 3 years. Do you recommend a tiered commission plan reducing every year for the first 3 years? I'm not entirely sure, but if it is ratcheting, yeah, I'm not a big fan of like, well, I liked what Colin said. I think that there's ratcheting, which in the sense of like, hey, it feels very arbitrary. And then there's ratcheting where, or it's not really ratcheting. There's just like a career path that might involve you. Yeah. Like the steps, it's a career path where you get, maybe you have a higher quota, but you get a whole bunch of other benefits and you want to put your top performing rep on a career path. So I'm not totally sure from this question, which one that is. But I would certainly say if you're just going to kind of arbitrarily change quotas, or even penalize those who hit their quotas in previous quarters, that's not a good idea. If you're going to create a career path for folks where they maybe get like Colin said earlier, where they get, maybe they have a higher quota, but they're also getting, they're now able to close enterprise level deals and they have, there's lots of benefits for them to kind of to grow into a role where they might have to take a step back and they might have a bigger nut that they need to crack. That's totally fine. Colin, do you understand this maybe question a little better than I did?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Cyrus, if I totally butchered this.
Here's his updated. So I meant for a single customer, 10% revenue on the first year, 8 on the second year, et cetera, et cetera. So I see what you're saying. So yeah. I think what I've seen in the past with, if you look at Jason Lemkin's stuff, I'm just going to regurgitate what he says. You'll see like the majority of your commission is coming on the first year of revenue. And then you're going to get like, let's say for example, I think like 10% on the first year and then 2% residuals if you are paying residuals, and then having something in there for upsells. So if nothing expands or changes and the rep doesn't do any work, then, you know, sometimes you've got the sort of small residual that's there. And then if the rep is involved in an upsell, then it reverts back to the regular commission amount on that percentage. Yeah. I'm regurgitating Jason Lemkin there. Anything to add there, Tron?
Just that like you said, the 8%, those two numbers seem the 8% seems high, you know, for a second year. Yep. For a renewal, if that's what that is.
Cool. And check out the link, the Saster framework for sales comp plan. If it's not in there, Jason's definitely written a blog post on it. So spend some time on the blog. We'll send all these links out. But really thanks everybody for joining. Drawn, if people want to get in touch with you, if they want to check out spiff.com, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, just we're new enough that you can just chat in and we'll get you an answer to your question, and I'll make sure we use Drift, so you can just come to our website and chat in. We'll get you answers to questions. We can provide you with additional research and links, and I'll get that to you as well, Colin.
Perfect. I've got a link to the blog post that this podcast was based on. And so if anybody wants to check it out, we'll throw that in the show notes. We'll also email it out to anybody who jumped on and shared this live. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. It was good sharing the stage with you, Jerome. Thanks so much for coming on. And we'll see everybody next week.
It was awesome to spend time with you, Colin. Thanks.
Right. See ya.
Bye.